我哋系侯斯顿嘅 Pacifica KPFT 90.1 FM 90.1.
Mimi Pacifica, uhuru wa mazungumzo kwa watu walio huru.
हम ताकत के सामने भी सच्चाई से बोलते हैं. हम हैं Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Let's all get together and pray for the peace on earth.
من غير العدالة مش ممكن نوجد السلام.
Здравствуйте. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites.
God, these microphones. Yay. Welcome to Technology Bites, everyone. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
And Peter Hughes.
Peter's listed as away.
As away.
Up, up.
Up, up, and... All right. Well, we'll work on getting Peter Hughes on the show via the Skypes from San Antonio. In the meantime... Check us out at geekradio.com, where you can learn all you need to learn about the program at geekradio.com. You can also like our Facebook page at facebook.com/geekradio.
Like me.
And you can hang out with us at IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, and the channel Tech Bites. If you're not familiar with how to use IRC, you can always use the IRC client that we've published on our website. It's the show within a show. It's where all the cool kids hang out and use FCC prohibited language.
Like.
Yeah, like rhymes with. No, I'm not even going to go that route. Okay, so we've got that going on. Still jet lagged. I'd like to take a nap. Maybe I can arrange for that during the show. You got a bear time later on? Is that going to happen?
Unfortunately, no. Because I forgot today was Wednesday until about 40
minutes
ago.
Oh, that's right. You did say
yeah.
You'd forgotten.
I'll have one tomorrow.
Okay. We'll have the...
Oops. I have clean teeth.
You have clean teeth?
Yes.
I went to the dentist, got my teeth cleaned yesterday.
Mine are very clean.
Yeah?
Yeah. My gums feel very clean. They feel a little manhandled. There was a very small woman that made them feel that way. But yeah.
How often do you go to the dentist?
I've been going... I there for a while. I didn't go for a long time. And then about a year ago, I cracked a tooth. So I've been getting regular teeth cleanings once a quarter. Because that's how much insurance will cover it. So, you know, just until my gums are... I forget what number I'm supposed to be at. But,
do you have a bunch of fours?
It's one through six. Is one good or is six good?
One is good.
No, when I first went in there, I had some fours and even a five or two. But now I think I'm solid twos and threes.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
good.
Well, it's been a year. And I've been, like, you know, brushing and flossing and... Oh, this is PSA. I always thought that flossing was to get food out from between your teeth or funky stuff. It's to go below the gum lines and do all that. So I've been doing it the wrong way for almost 40 years. So once I did that, my gum health turned around.
What?
What do you mean?
I wasn't listening. What?
Well,
the floss goes.
See, actually, you can see, like, so you go down twice. Like, one kind of on both sides of the gum around the tooth.
That little cavity... Or that little space in your gums.
Yeah, I thought I was just getting out steak, but apparently no. No, it there are other purposes for it.
I thought
you gotta
go sucking it free would do that.
Yeah, you know, like, nope, do I have to floss tonight? I'm good. I had a toothpick for dinner. You know?
apparently you're supposed to wrap it around the tooth and pull it like you're starting a lawnmower.
Nice. Oh, yeah, I'm so glad I'm not alive in the 1800s. I mean, we can complain about, you know, how everything is horrible with tech, but dentistry.
Do you use... just regular floss, or do you have one of those floss sticks?
I don't have a floss stick. I did finally upgrade and get a electric toothbrush.
Yeah.
But, like, one of the ones that actually will, like, beep after 30 seconds, or the vibration changes, so you know to go to the different quadrant. So I now brush 2 minutes at a time. And then also, like, if you press too hard, it vibrates funky and will tell you, hey, you're pressing too hard, which I just thought that's the way it worked until I read the manual. And then I'm like, oh, I've been doing it wrong, too.
I see.
I'm getting better. As far as for IT teeth, I've got pretty decent IT teeth.
So you floss? You floss?
Yes. Yeah.
Regularly?
Yeah, lately. I mean, I'm not great about it, but
I'm not very good about flossing regularly, although my dentist, who's usually pretty good about not harassing me about my dental health, said...
See, you floss irregularly.
I floss irregularly. And this time, I mean, I've been to... You know, I went to the dentist the first time in many, many years... I had not gone to the dentist probably for like 10 or 15 years or something like that. And I went to the dentist. I had to do the whole deep cleaning where they really go down and get... Because you have plaque built up under your gums. And I've been going 3 times a year. My insurance only pays for 2, so I eat the third one. My dentist makes me go 3 times a year. But this time...
Make him pay.
Three times a year?
Yeah. Once every 4 months.
It seems often.
Does he happen to get you to, like, check his computer for spyware every time you come in or anything like that?
No.
Well, maybe
no.
You can work out a deal.
Huh?
Do some kind of barter thing.
I think having healthy teeth is a good barter. Because I go 3 times a year because of my irregular flossing.
It's probably just easier to pay for it.
If it's not that expensive to get your teeth cleaned, really. It's like $60, you know. It's not that expensive to get your teeth cleaned. It's more expensive to get the crown I just got, you know, because my teeth are falling apart. I was driving through Houston. Okay. I was on this dentist
flossing show.
Show.
Have you guys know Mitch Hedberg, who passed away a while ago? He said, people who smoke say you don't know how hard it is to stop smoking. Yes, I do. It's as hard as it is to start flossing. Yeah, the rest of us aren't written down, but they had a bit where, like, hey, Mitch, you look nervous. Are you trying to quit smoking? He's like, no, I'm about to floss.
Now, I bought those disposable floss sticks, so you just jam those in there. And
those look okay, but those look dangerous. By the time, I mean, I floss late at night, but the time it comes, you know, flossing time, I can impale a cheek with one of those. I just go old school. Well, I go like I'm about to choke somebody on Dexter is kind of how I feel.
I go no school.
Do you have ridiculously healthy teeth, like through no effort? I mean, there are people
pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, I have...
That'll change.
I have hard enamel teeth.
Some people have good genetics on that. They have got perfectly white teeth, and they don't do very much at all, you know.
Or they belong to the Church of Christ Dentist. You know, like the Christ Scientist ones won't go to the doctor, and then the dentist ones won't go to the dentist.
I don't think that's a worry with Flicked there.
There's a really good Penny Arcade comic. If you Google Penny-Arcade and then the Maw, like M-A-W, it's pretty awesome. That's kind of how it felt for me going back to the dentist after a little bit of time away. But yeah, Penny Arcade, the Maw.
No, I mean, you know, I don't have a problem going to the dentist. I like going to the dentist. I want to keep my teeth. I want to have them.
See, but when I was growing up, my dentist, and I'm assuming probably a lot of them have this, but he had this thing on his wall that always said, like, you don't have to floss all your teeth, only the ones you want to keep.
Nice. Well, I found my dentist through my wife, because my wife would go to the dentist, her old dentist, and she'd go to the dentist, and she hated the dentist so much that while she was in the waiting room, she would cry. Because in anticipation of getting
kind of like
teeth
traveling,
pain. Huh?
Kind of like flying with her.
Kind of like that, but she got asked by her dentist. The receptionist called her over one day and said, "You're going to have to find another dentist because you're scaring the other patients."
That's awesome.
So she found this other dentist, Dr. Silberman, who we use now.
Dwight.
No, not Dwight.
Oh.
B, not a V.
we kept rolling downhill. Could you just hold the dentistry tools and just do the best you can? No one else will take her.
No, and he's great. He's super nice, super good at what he does. I mean,
and he gives her laughing gas every time, no matter what.
That would be awesome.
That's probably.
As soon as she walks in, they're just like, "Here you go."
No, be nice now. But no, he's a great dentist, and it was funny because he is a fan of the column. Not the show, but the column. So he does ask computer questions now and again, but he's also a photographer. So that's kind of awesome. So we talk photography.
Do you ever want to take a picture of your mouth?
He takes pictures of my mouth all the time.
Oh, right. Can you actually do the live thing? Do they do that there where they do little,
where
you know, and you can actually.
Little camera on the end of a pen into your mouth, and he can show you, because, okay, here's the crack.
Wow. Like,
that's scary, because they usually put it up on a really huge screen. So, you know, your little tooth, it's usually pretty tiny, and, you know, those crevices are small. Suddenly the crevices are like 8 inches wide.
Well, the technology has advanced so quickly that he doesn't do it anymore, but. The crowns that you could make them, mm-hmm. right there in the place. It's like a 3D printer,
yeah.
for teeth.
Yeah, or like it's instead of additive printing, they like have the redactive or something like that. But they more or less it's like a little lathe, and I guess it's not a lathe because it doesn't spin. But yeah, they 3D scan your tooth, and then he actually let me paint up some enamel. I wish if I could go back, I'd like carve my initials in it or put some zeros and ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, then they do it right there. It just goes and it etches out whatever off that, you know, tooth blank.
So it's like they're milling aluminum rims from a solid block of aluminum, except it's a tooth.
Yeah.
Just about weeks before, wouldn't you have to get like temporary stuff and you have to come back 2 weeks later
you'd have to get
and yada, yada, yada.
And now it's back to that because the technology has advanced so much that he can't justify buying the new machine, so it's cheaper for him to go back to outsourcing to a company that does it. So the first crown that he gave me, it was done right there in the shop and it went in, but the last crown that I got, I had to do a temporary crown. And then even beyond that, because of the nature of dentistry these days, they put the weaker glue on it because they want to make sure that it's going
to come back off when it needed to.
Yeah, if there's still a problem with pain or they need to go in and do a root canal or something like that, they could take it off. But the temporary kept falling off, and I said, just put it in there permanently.
See, I had one of my front teeth is a crown because when I was like 10 years old, I tripped and landed on my tooth. And it cracked the bottom of it.
After it came in? Like your adult tooth?
Yeah. But it didn't get to the nerve. Like it was exposed. Like it was, the sac of the nerve was exposed, but it didn't break it. Uh-huh. So it wasn't actually really painful.
Right.
So my dentist at the time just kind of took that putty stuff and fashioned the bottom part of my tooth. And I actually had that for like 20 years. It wore faster than my other teeth, but it was there and it functioned. And then eventually, I guess it went down too far, and so one day I broke a shard off the back of the tooth.
Ow.
So at that point, the people were like, "Oh, you need to get a crown."
See, I always thought crowns were for the back teeth and tiaras were for the front teeth.
I don't know.
Well, I had, because I did this, I did a similar thing when I was probably 11 or 12 years old, I was riding a bicycle and got tripped up, and I fell, shot out over the handlebars, and I flew into the sidewalk and landed on my tooth and broke it. And so, like, half, like a diagonal chip out of my tooth. And it was that way all through high school. And then when I went in the Navy, they fixed it. And that lasted, that fix was just like they added enamel or whatever, the epoxy or and it fashioned the rest of the tooth. And that lasted for like 20 some odd years. And then one day I'm eating something and it just fell apart. Didn't hurt or anything, but then my dentist did it again for me, and that's holding up pretty well.
So. I would have preferred that. This time they were like, oh, you need a crown. And so they had to, like,
whittle away part of the tooth.
They shaved
it. It's
so horrible.
It's like seeing people with skull caps on to imitate baldness. It's like, I'd just rather be bald.
It's like they shave the tooth down till it's like this little stick that looks like it's just waiting to break and hurt.
They do that for the backgrounds too, though. They grind them down so they have a thing to put the cap on.
But then what happened was they had this green solution that was to clean stuff, I guess. And it's green. Well, the dental assistant or whatever put it inside the crown, my permanent crown. The other thing was my temporary crown broke like two or three times. I had to get new ones. But they put this one on, but they had put that green stuff inside of it, and they weren't supposed to. So the tooth looked green.
If only it was blue.
If only it glowed in the dark.
Bluetooth.
Blue. I was driving through Houston. There's a show that made me cringe on.
Well, here's the really cringy part. They put it on permanently, and they're like, oh, it's kind of later on. Oh, it's kind of green. So they made me come back, and they're like, oh, we're going to have to replace. Do you want to replace? And I'm like, yeah, it does look kind of green. So I guess you know. So then they sit me down, and they have to break off the one that's permanently glued to that little sliver of original tooth stick and then put another temporary in. And, yeah, when they first walked up, she just had a pair of pliers or something to crack the tooth. And they had not given me anything. And she just, like, walked up and, like, went up to my mouth. I was like, no. Like, you didn't give me any local or anything. Like, there's no way I'm going to let you put a pair of pliers on my tooth without anything.
Ooh.
Is it safe? Marathon Man. Ew. Can we talk about something less cringy, like maybe like fingernails on chalkboard, or maybe like some tech news? Microsoft's up to no good, or Apple's
thing to make you cringe? Is,
no.
All right.
One last thing to make you cringe is imagine combining the camera thing with Oculus Rift. So you get the 3D while the dentist is going there and drilling out your mouth.
My dentist offers an opportunity to put on headphones and listen to classical music.
Yeah, I got to do that, and there's a little TV, so I got to watch some Friendship is Magic. And they're like, do you want to change it? Like, no, just leave it. I don't care what's on. I cared what was on.
So now you're a brony.
A little bit, dude. Flying DEF CON 2, the seat back. So it was, that came on. So some dude's looking at me all weird because I'm trying to take a picture of the seat back with, you know, like My Little Pony for you. And, you know, if it's not bad enough that you're watching that.
Wait, where is this?
This is on the flight to Vegas.
You're watching My Little Pony.
Up in first, yeah. Up on the back, on my seat back. So I'm flipping. It's like,
first class?
Yeah, I got a super cheap mileage rewards. I flew first, which was good because when our plane got all delayed and turned around, you know, and all that shenanigans, we were the only ones that got food and drinks, at least at the first part.
I read I read that you one-upped my my plastic sword for a drink.
What?
For security?
For going through security.
He put the plastic
sword in. Accidentally.
What did you do? Did you carry another knife?
I had a very large X-Acto knife in my top. It was still in the cardboard, you know, thing you buy it in, so it's fine. I would have had to go through that to take over the plane. But yeah, it was pretty big. I didn't realize. I was flipping through DEF CON pictures, and I'm like, dude, that's what was right in the top of my case. And that's usually the case they open up and break down and make me take everything out of, but I guess I got lucky this time. So.
Wow. All right, well, that's enough of the dentistry and terrorism show. We're going to now go out to San Antonio and do the Technology Bites Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, here's one right out of the Matrix. Isn't it weird if researchers have discovered a way to use simple touch to decode the cryptography keys that are intended to secure your information. Wow. It's as easy as gauging the electric potential coursing through your computer while it's working. In the MIT Technology Review today, we learned of a paper out of Tel Aviv University that details the process of measuring the ground electric potential in laptops. There's different ways to do it. You could use like a wire, but of course, using your own hand and analyzing the signal, your preferably sweaty hand, and then analyzing the signal from that to get, you know, use sophisticated software seems cooler. Basically, the chassis potential, the electric potential of your laptop is measured, is affected by ongoing computation, and our attacks exploit this to extract RSA and other keys within a few seconds. They said, according to the researchers, the hand method works especially effectively in hot weather, since sweaty fingers offer lower electric resistance. So what they're doing is taking advantage of the noise your computer makes when it's processing the information to figure out when and how they should listen in. So how do you protect against this? Yeah. It is possible to avoid such attacks by adding random data to computations. In other words, you'll have to put codes on top of codes. So that's just it's weird, but I thought that would be interesting. You could have some interesting, the anti-spyware deals now, you know, you can get your kind of tinfoil, the kind of tinfoil hat or other type clever devices that are supposed to protect your laptop. So just cover it in foil and I don't know, wires and stuff, and change the electric potential of it. In other news, this one's an interesting one, a couple of tablet things. Generic Android tablets. You've seen there's some like super El Cheapo ones floating around. Generic Android tablets with 7-inch screens and quad-core chips that deliver decent performance could soon sell for under $35. Tablets with low-resolution screens are already selling for around $45 on Amazon. Many of those have single or dual-core processors from a Chinese chip. from a Chinese chip company called Allwinner. But the prices could fall under $35 when Allwinner ships its fully formed quad-core A33 chip for only $4. That's for the processor. The chip's quad-core processors will deliver better performance than older chips and be capable of supporting 1280 by 800 displays, according to the analyst firm Linley Group. The chip's based on ARM's Cortex A7 design and is capable of rendering high-definition video. The cheap tablets will likely come from no-name vendors in China and won't obviously have the bells and whistles of Samsung or Apple tablets, but they could increase price pressure on brand names like HP and Acer, which have entry-level tablets right now priced around $100. This will mostly be things that are work for first-time buyers or users who aren't picky about hardware or software. You know, if you're a power user, it's not going to fly for you. They'll likely have limited memory, limited storage, and fewer ports than more expensive devices. Although, you know, my Nexus 7 only has one port. You know, it's the USB port, or mini USB port that you charge it on. So people might move up from there. But the thing that's interesting to me is on this is, you know, when they're that inexpensive, you almost wonder on some of these if they're using the Google, you know, they're using the Android operating system, and if they work suitably well enough, $35 for a decent working one, you wonder about at schools for kids. Because then if they break it, it's not like when they break a, you know, if it's an iPad even, that's $300 or $400. But 30, 35, seems like that could be useful. And in other odd tablet news, there's a report that the phone-sized tablet, you know, like the phablet, has gone one better. Now people are talking on even larger devices, aka I'm on the pad phone. IDC says tablets with a screen of 7 inches or larger are increasingly shipping with cellular voice capability and getting a lot of traction in the Asia-Pacific region, excluding Japan, pushing past the 25% mark. So just odd. It's not really talking. The thing is, the study doesn't track whether people are talking on these tablets, but more vendors are adding cellular capabilities to tablets, and more of these voice-enabled slates are being shipped, which it doesn't, it doesn't seem likely that they would put it on there if it wasn't being used or requested. The study notes that tablets with cellular voice capabilities aren't new. They've been around since the first generation of Samsung tabs. It does say it's tracked a surge in shipments and vendors since the beginning of this year. So talking on tablets is on the march. I'm guessing a lot of it is ties to people using using the screen for real tablet things and then using a Bluetooth or some other thing to access the phone stuff. So you just wonder, is that day going to come where basically you don't have a separate phone and tablet, that you just have the tablet and you can talk through it? It seems like you're going to get something with some of the continuity features that are starting to come up across devices from both Google and Apple. You almost wonder, I guess some of it may work similarly, even though your tablet wouldn't have a cell phone. It can commandeer your cell phone that runs the same operating system. And then finally on, this is sort of new stuff, and then the rest of it's all like Apple, iPad, and iPhone stuff. So I'm just blocking that all together after this. This one is one of those where you kind of go, it's obvious where somebody would come up with this. The part that's not obvious is why one of the leaders in the field wasn't the one to come up with it. So that's cryptic enough, huh? No, but what it is, Sharp has released a new cell phone. And the thing about this one is it has virtually no bezel. There's no rim. There's essentially the minimum amount of space between the edge of the screen and the edge of the phone. It's just got a little, it's a line of metal around the outside, where if you look, take out whatever phone you've got right now, like the, your iPhone, your latest and greatest iPhone or your latest and greatest Android phone, and they have stuff that's more like, an eighth of an inch or more, almost, some of them the top and bottom bezels on a lot of phones are half an inch or almost half an inch. And this Sharp one on three sides, on the top and the left and the right, has virtually no bezel. And without a contract, it's going to be $239. It runs Android. Sprint is going to be getting it first. So not sure if anybody else is going to get it. The deal is it's called the Aquos Crystal. It's a 5-inch phone with a 720p edge-to-edge display with virtually no bezel, like I said. In pictures, it apparently looks really cool, but in person, they said it's like something out of a sci-fi movie, because the screen just goes right up to virtually the edge. So, I'm surprised that this isn't – this seems like something that Samsung or Apple should have figured out a lot sooner. But, Sharp beat them to it, and it does look cool. I mean, it's one of those things where, the sort of – when you announce a new phone, like, the iPhone 6 stuff is coming up, then this is the kind of thing that really would get people's attention. And it's sort of funny that Sharp is the one providing it. So now on to Apple stuff. A lot of this will be quick. One of these this one ties into a bigger thing, but Apple apparently is getting into the game. They're finally, because now we live in the future, they're finally working on USB connectors that don't take three tries to plug in. You know what I'm talking about. You go to plug in the USB, and since it's got a direction on it, when you go to put it in, you try it and you think, oh, that's not working, so I've got it upside down, and then you turn it the other way, and then you figure out that you absolutely have it the wrong way, and then you turn it back the way you had in the first place, except this time you're sure, and so it connects in because you've got to have it the right direction. So everybody now is working on ones that are reversible, that can go either direction. And this first story is there are rumors are that Apple's working on its own reversible cable. The one that the spec is the USB Type-C connector spec that was finalized earlier this week. But apparently Apple's already working on its own solution for its next generation Lightning cables, a type of reversible connector that will fit into the USB Type-A port in either orientation. So the thing about it is it's got to have very thin parts to make it so it'll work either direction. That's part of why they're asymmetrical, is so that they can, you know, put all the stuff in there that it needs to make the connection. So that's coming for all USB and apparently also for Apple Lightning connector stuff, so they don't want to get left behind on that. Another iPad, next generation iPad news. The next iPad Air, which is the second generation of iPad Air, may get a memory upgrade. They're talking about bumping it up to 2 gigabytes of RAM instead of the 1 gig that's in the current device. That's according to Taiwan's Tech News. According to the site, the increased RAM will be limited to the iPad Air, as the second generation Retina iPad Mini is expected to continue to offer 1 gigabyte of RAM. Isn't that amazing? You know, this tablet that you could buy. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's equivalent in the Android world, that this tablet that you buy. You know, how long did it take for computers? How long did you use computers before you had 1 gig of RAM? That was years and years before they got to that. And now this is going to have 2 gigs. It's certainly creeping up on computer levels of RAM, you know, desktop levels of RAM fairly quickly. And just while we're at it, you know, since the iPad is likely coming up on them announcing something, announcing, you know, a next gen on it, there's starting to be discounts floating around on iPad Airs. If you don't have one and you're interested in one, for instance, today Best Buy had a one-day sale where they had a $75 discount on all iPad Air models, and they had a bigger discount on the larger memory ones. But expect to see more of that as we move forward towards the new launch. Obviously, people want to sell; they want to sell out of their current generation before the price drops dramatically with whatever the new ones are. And then the last thing, a couple of iPhone rumors. One of the rumors, this one's an interesting one. Actually, this one's kind of, you know, there's not a lot of things left to have rumors about, as regular listeners may have noticed. But this one is about the cellular modem. Rumor has it that they're going to move up to a 150 megabit per second cellular modem in the next gen iPhone. That's 50% faster than the modem found in the iPhone 5S. This modem features a third generation LTE chipset, was first announced by Qualcomm in February of last year and began shipping later in 2012. It was announced by Qualcomm in February of 2012 and began shipping later that year. So it's been out for a while. A recent post on the GeekBar website alleges that the LTE advanced modem is bound for the so-called iPhone 6. If true, that would take you up to 50 megabits more over the current 100 megabits per second speed offered by the iPhone 5S. So it is possible, and so we'll keep an eye on that one. Certainly more speed is better, although one of these where you kind of go, oh, yeah, got to go from 100 megabit per second to 150, or I'm just not – or I walk – When what are you running at home? You know, maxing out at 50, unless you're one of those lucky few that is sitting on, you know, who lives in Austin and listens to the show and has, you know, Google gigabit internet or something like that. But and finally, Apple. This one's the bad news. I give you the good news that, you know, maybe you're going to get 150 megabit per second modem if you want to get an iPhone 6. This one on the other side. The Sapphire display may not be happening this year. J.P. Morgan analyst Rod Hall has issued a note to investors in which he reacted to a report from last week suggesting that Sapphire display costs remain high and that they may be waiting to use some new technology because the Sapphire partner for Apple has acquired a company known as Twin Creeks, which uses a different process that can reduce the cost of building a Sapphire screen cover so that he thinks they may wait so that the Sapphire cost comes down so that they can compete better with Gorilla Glass. So it's a little good news, little bad news. That's kind of always the way the technology news bounces, huh? So I'm Peter Hughes, and that's the Technology Bytes InfoShot News.
All right. Thanks for that, Peter. So in response to your USB story, I found a great graphic. It says, it's a well-known fact that you must spin a USB three times before it will fit. From this, we can gather that a USB has three states, up position, down position, and super position. Until the USB is observed, it will stay in its super position. Therefore, it will not fit until observed, except in cases of USB tunneling.
It has to be observed twice, is right. What the rule seems.
Well, if you observe it the first time, if you actually look at it and pay attention, it'll go in the first time. But if you don't observe it and you plug it in, it won't fit, no matter what, even if it's in the correct position, as Pete.
So after the first time, you have a 50-50 chance.
I've gotten better, but unless you know what you're looking for, I used to look at it, put it in, take it out, look at it, put it in, take it out, look at it, and then it would go in the third time. For this one, it's weighted. The thing you're looking for is there's like a middle plastic thing. It's either going to be like on the top or on the bottom, and you just get that on the opposite side of wherever that plastic lip is on the port.
And then when you do it the second time, it'll work.
Yeah.
The thing, the one that real USB, yeah, you know, basically you do it one way, you do it the other way. You know, you get it. You don't have to look. You can get it to go in. The one that drives me nuts is mini USB.
That you have
actually
to look,
is
yeah.
shaped. The you know the plug is actually narrower on one side than the other.
It's kind of shaped like a hat.
Yeah, and like, so you have to put it in. If you put it in the wrong direction, it absolutely is not gonna. It's not even gonna attempt to start. And I've you know so I have a Nexus 7 that's got that, and that one, even when you look and you line, so you've looked and you can see that you've got it right. It still takes several shots to get it to actually go into the plug.
That looks like the 1950s UFO to me. That's what shape
and then
that reminds
micro,
me of.
Micro USB is the same except flatter.
It's like the Pizza Hut hat. Yeah, it's which the cable that the device takes is always the opposite of what I have is how that works.
This might be, I guess maybe it's micro that's the one on the Nexus, but it's still, it's one of those where it's narrower on the bottom.
Both mini and micro are both like that. But the micro one's like really flat compared to the mini.
Yeah, so it must be micro. And someday I'm just going to break that Nexus in half, trying to shove the stupid micro into the USB slot to charge it. It's not like you even have to – it's just to charge it. It's not even to really sync it up with anything. You know, that all happens over the network, so you don't have to.
Ah, Pete. You know, you could get a wireless charging station.
Oh, for the Nexus?
Yeah, yeah. I use that. I've got a couple of them. And it's awesome because even if you can get it plugged in correctly the same way, I just feel like, you know, over 200 or 300 plug-ins and takeouts, it's going to start to wear on that and it gets loose. Now, it charges ever so slightly slower. Like, you know, my charging delta is about a minute when it's plugged into the wall and maybe about a minute and 20 seconds when it's on the base. But yeah, it works for Nexus 5, Nexus 7. You set it down, and it just charges you know, right through the back. No wires, no anything.
That's a thought, because mostly mine sits the Nexus. I take it out with me when I rarely get out. You know, I work from home and spend most of my time at home. So mainly, it sits like on the coffee table. It's like a magazine that's always there. So I pick it up and use it, and then when it runs out of juice, I'll plug it in again. But
that could be perpetually charged. They make some too that's like 45-degree tilt, where you know you can actually kind of see what's going on while you're sitting on the couch if you've got it on the coffee table.
Wow. Okay, I'm gonna have to look that up.
All right. Well, we're gonna go to the phones now. We do have some calls in the queue. It looks like so. That's awesome. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, the number is 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. So first up, Groovehouse.
First up on the show, we're going to start it off with George.
Hello, George.
Hi there. Wow. Can I call me? Surprise there. This is going to be probably a boring
phone. We can come back to you if you like.
No, that's okay. Boring phone call for you guys tonight. But recently I've seen high-definition television before. I never paid much attention to it. But I had to stay in a hotel for a couple of weeks because of some issues in my apartment. Well, they had a high-definition television in the hotel room, and now I have to have one. I need some clarification as to the difference between 720p, 1080i, and a few questions about name brands and things like that. So what is the difference between 720p and 1080i? Is one much better than the other one?
Well, that has to do with how many lines.
How many pixels?
How many pixels
the screen has?
The higher the number, the better the TV.
Okay.
So, you know, 1080 is better than 720.
Okay.
Because it's higher resolution, more pixels, more pixel density, the image is going to be clearer and sharper. As long as you're getting HD content. See, now therein lies the rub, as it were, with HD televisions. If you do not have HD input, it doesn't do you any good. The first thing I struggled with when I got my first HD TV was that I didn't subscribe to any HD content through my cable service. So I was looking at standard definition television on my HD TV and thinking, I got ripped off. I didn't realize that there were separate channels to provide the HD content. So instead of 13 for channel 13 here in Houston, you had to go to 613 on Comcast. But if you might have gotten a few of those channels, but if you really wanted the good HD content, you had to subscribe to the HD package. So now the good news is that broadcast television is broadcasting in HD, and that quality is very, very good. It's extremely good. In fact, it's better in some ways than cable because it's uncompressed. So what are you going to be using the HDTV for? What are you going to use to provide your content?
Comcast cable, and I have a DVD player, which I think, I don't know if it's high definition or not. It says something in there about HDMI, but I don't know if it's high definition or not.
It's good chance it could be if it's got an HDMI. If it didn't have that, it definitely wouldn't be high def. But right. This, it could be.
Well, DVD would be good. It would be even better if you get a Blu-ray and start looking at Blu-ray movies instead of DVD. Flickney could probably speak to this a little bit more intelligently.
He's talking to Groove, though. As far as brands go, and it was as far as the HDTV panels go and the displays, there are only three, I guess there are about four companies in the world that make them.
Okay.
And the DEF CON, I actually attended a small talk where they were saying, like, you know, just like you've got monster wires and stuff like that, you know, it's just, you know, they'd charge you like $50 for a $5 cable. Or what may even be like a 50-cent cable. They were talking about like a lot of the name brands. Like let's just like say we were going to say Sony, how they advertise. Like we have our pictures brighter and lusher and deeper, and we do digital enhancing. The idea is that this is a digital signal. If you do anything to the signal, you're really just kind of degrading from the picture that they originally wanted to transmit over. So there's a lot of the stuff that, you know, they're saying, hey, this is more awesome, this is better. A little bit of it is snake oil right now. So. You know, aside from maybe build quality.
Although there is digital, processing involved.
Well, yeah, the DSP, yeah.
And so that can definitely have some effect.
Yeah.
But the actual panels themselves, yeah, there's only a couple of places that manufacture them.
Do you have a preference in what the brand you like?
No, without really getting into endorsing any brands.
Go to a store and look.
Exactly right.
Yep.
Unfortunately, when you go to a store and look, it's hard to tell because a lot of times... The companies themselves will screw with the colors, and so certain TVs will have color enhance, and certain will be base levels. And a lot of the companies, if they know they're going to have a display model, they will enhance like the reds to make because it makes it pop.
Well, you can still do that, right? You can enhance your own colors.
Well, you can,
yeah, but
you
it
can,
just looks different just, when you get a home and window.
It just makes it hard to compare.
Well,
realistically,
things,
what they look like.
You can go to a place like Best Buy or any of these big box stores, and you can get them to go. You know, you find somebody who actually knows what they're talking about with these TVs, and they're not working on a commission. Then you can get some actual good information on the TVs. And then the other thing I learned after buying my second HD TV is that it doesn't matter what it looks like in the store. If you're looking at it at home. And it's the only TV you're looking at.
It's going to be awesome.
It looks great.
It looks awesome.
You know, great. I mean, because you're not sitting there looking like eyeballing one TV, eyeballing the other TV, eyeballing back on the original TV and go, okay, You know,
well, I doubt that HDTV in the motel or the hotel room you stayed at was extremely high end. It's probably like a lower end TV that they did in all the chains.
But I will say that that you know, if you buy on a budget, you're going to get a budget TV.
Well, what model TV do you
have? I got LG.
LG.
I have Samsung and Sony.
Yeah. LG's not bad. Yeah, I've had pretty good luck with them so far.
Yeah, LG looks good. My Samsung's nice too. I mean, they're all nice. Yeah.
They're really all very good. I mean, once a lot of the better TVs, you know, if you're buying like a smaller sub $500 TV, it probably isn't going to have the features that say an $800 to $2,000 TV is going to have in terms of the ability to fine tune it. Because my TV, you can adjust it for the room. You can go in and do your color balances and things like that, which is real nice to be able to kind of fine-tune it for your own likes. But
you're a photographer, though, and you've got probably a more critical eye than I think most people coming into their first HDTV may.
Possibly.
The other thing is, do you want a smart TV?
Yeah,
you might want something with Netflix and YouTube, and I mean that's super cool.
We don't really know how a lot of the TV manufacturers that are building all these applications, if they're going to stand behind them for a long time, or if they're going to work in 3 years. So you can get like a quote unquote dumb TV, and then go get like a Roku or go get like an iTV.
Had I had smart appliances.
My Blu-ray has wireless.
Right.
I bought a $50 Blu-ray.
I could have saved a lot of money not getting a smart TV.
Oh, that's funny you should mention that. I was thinking of getting a smart TV. Okay.
If you get a smart all a smart TV means is the TV has the ability to run applications right on the television, such as Netflix, Hulu, games, internet access, all that nonsense. Is built into the TV.
It's
cool, but one of the things that I learned buying my first smart TV is that the TV is just barely capable of running those apps. It just barely has the resources to do it. So it's kind of a slow.
Yeah, my TV is basically worthless as far as a smart TV. It was an early generation smart TV. It has an incredibly wonderful picture, but I don't even use any of the apps on them because it's horrible.
Here's the thing. When it first comes out, it's going to be okay. But when you're building a computer into a TV, what you now have, you've got a TV with a computer in it. And whereas you would keep a TV for, you know, 10 years or who knows how many years, and you upgrade your computer every handful of years, like maybe two or three times during one TV, you marry the computer to the TV, and if you want to stay on top of all the computer upgrades in the TV, you're going to be replacing your TV every few years.
Well, my experience, I had a Blu-ray player that had feature sets built in, a TV that has feature set built in, and after it's been out for about a year, the company stops sending
updating,
updates.
Yeah.
So but at some point, they start to decay and
I think it's
work.
Advertising to like make theirs look different than the next one. Like if you're looking at two TVs and they're identical, which like we said a lot of the panels are, and one's like smart super awesome TV and the other one's like just a TV, you're gonna buy the smart super awesome TV, and even though it's throwaway electronics, you know, that's exactly what it is a lot of times, especially over the long run.
Wow.
But if you get one with a, you know, at a good deal, it might not be a bad thing.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it's nice to have some of those features. I use, for example, on my smart TV, I use Netflix built into it, and it's nice to have because, you know, it logs into my Netflix account, and I can program all my things on the computer, and they're available on the TV.
See, I have a Harmony all-in-one remote. So I just have everything hooked up. I tell it I want to watch a movie or whatever. It turns on everything, sets it to all the right settings. So it's no different than having a smart TV, except the devices are separate. And so I can watch Netflix over my Blu-ray player, which is okay. But I actually prefer to watch it over my Apple TV. And the reason is, even both of them log into my accounts. Both of them list all my movies. But part of what I like about it is that the Apple TV interface is not the standard Netflix interface.
Right.
And so it doesn't start auto-playing the next episode of something, which annoys me greatly.
Does it keep track of the episodes that you've seen, though?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Just not all the niceties.
But with a great TV, I mean, all this stuff is secondary, but if you got a great TV.
Right.
You know.
The main thing is getting a screen that's the size that you want for the room. That's the other consideration, is that when I bought my smart TV, I bought a big one for a small room, and it was not a good fit.
Okay.
And so
there are ratios. If you go online, there's like a ratio of like how far back you want to be to how large the TV should be in your viewing area and everything. Right. And I just got a dumb TV, but I watch a lot of documentaries, so I'm hoping that'll change.
And also, whether or not you want 3D or not.
Yeah, is that a fad? Do people still do 3D stuff? Because I haven't heard a lot about that recently. Like 2 years ago, it was 3D, 3D, 3D. Now
I've got
3D
in mine, and
I
every once in a while I just love to watch a 3D movie.
And one more thing, I hear something called LCD and LED. It's maybe it's just a matter of preference. Is one better than the other one?
Well, LED is what's taken over now, but you're thinking plasma and LCD, right?
Well, there's LED.
LED plus.
There's LED and LCD, which basically, as far as I know, LED. All right. So there's LCD screens, and they were backlit with bulbs. And then they came out with LED backlighting. So LED lights are much, much smaller, use less energy, and they could put them on the sides. And it made the TVs go from like 2.5 to 3 inches thick to like 1/2 inch thick. But in addition to that, Sony came out several years ago with AMOLED, AMOLED, which is an insanely awesome-looking picture. But at the time, and this was several years ago when I was looking at TVs, there was like a 12-inch Sony AMOLED LED TV that was like $3,000. So I don't know the status of those at this point. I'm assuming probably still TVs are not that, unless they're really small and really expensive. Because I don't think that technology has come down to the point where they're making
full-size TVs. No, I think it pushes more now to the 4K stuff anyway.
So normally if they say LCD versus LED, all it means is it's the backlighting that they use.
Okay. Wow, that's very interesting. All right, I'll...
Go buy a TV.
Yes.
Go read a book.
Yeah, go online, go to the store, look at them, you know. Enjoy.
All right, thank you, Ben.
All right, thanks for your call. Bye-bye. All right.
See, I like plasma, but it's a dying...
It's dying technology.
But plasma's nice.
Is your plasma TV dying, the black spots?
No.
That's what I was always afraid of. I've always heard that the blacks over time will erode.
Well, I mean, it does. It does lose its picture quality over time. But it's a lot better than they were when they first came out. You don't have burn-in problems, but the contrast on them is insanely
better.
Is it
a function of time or of use? Like, will it degrade the same over 2 years no matter use?
I assume it's use. Okay. I assume.
I haven't checked what technology they actually installed. I haven't had a chance to go through and look at what they put in. But in our new office, all the conference rooms have flat-screen TVs instead of projectors now, with HDMI inputs running out to the desk. And some of them, actually, there's in our multipurpose room, if you can have it have the display show on the main screen, but if you open the doors and you flip a couple of switches, it'll show it on three screens throughout the whole area. And, man, it just looks so good, especially this one. We've got this one 90-inch, and it's just fantastic looking. And the other day, one of my first days back at work, I was helping them set up for one of their meetings that they're having in one of the larger conference rooms, and they were scrambling looking for a whiteboard, a physical whiteboard. And I said, and the guy that was doing the presentation, I knew that he had a Windows 8 touchscreen. I said, why aren't you just doing the touchscreen whiteboard on your computer and throwing it up on the screen? And he got snap and figured it out. All right, well, we got to... We'll take this call real quick.
Yeah.
And before we go into the station break. So, Groovehouse, who do we have next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for taking the call.
No problem. What can we do for you?
Hey, I did have a quick question for you, just if you got time. I've always been curious where Flicted got his name from or how that all came about.
Ben Affleck fan. Huge Ben Affleck fan.
Oh, really? Okay, that's awesome.
It was either that or it was between that or Matt Damon. Couldn't. No, that's totally a lie.
That's a story.
That's not true.
I'm sorry.
No, that's a story for probably another show where we can spend the whole episode on it.
It's an origin story. Every hero has an origin story.
Right.
I always thought it was like a psychological state, like I'm conflicted, I'm afflicted. It got short like that.
The story is actually a lot longer and probably less interesting than you'd hope for. I think the mystery surrounding the naming Afflicted is probably better than the actual story, but that's up to Flicked if he wants to tell the story or not.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully sometime, you'll bestow that upon all your fans.
When the tell-all book comes out.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
I got home today. I left my computer on when I left this morning, and I got home today, and it had a screen that said insert boot disk or hit enter or something like that, something along those lines. I rebooted it, and then it came up with the HP screen, and it said there's computer didn't shut down right and gave me some options, F10 for recover the system or something like that. I tried hitting F10, nothing happened. The screen was frozen. And then I pulled out, you know, shut it down, pulled out. Or I didn't shut it down. I hit the button, you know, to cut the power. Pulled the plug from the back, cleared the capacitor by hitting the power or whatever that, however that works, and waited, started it back up. I did this several times. Eventually, I got it. It offered me safe mode. So I opened it up in safe mode. And now for the last 3 hours, I hit the startup repair option that was available. And for the last 3 hours, I just had a dialog box on my screen. It says it's attempting repairs. And there's more there if you want me to read it to you. But I'm just trying to figure out, for one, so is this process really still underway, or do I just need to cancel out of it?
I'm guessing that you probably have a failing hard drive and that you're going to have to consider, you know, maybe reloading your system, at least to find out if the drive itself is bad. Your data for sure has become corrupted, but the question is what has corrupted it.
Okay.
So it's more likely, the most likely candidate is a failed hard drive. How old is the computer?
You know, I think it's about 5 years old now, six maybe.
Yeah, so that's it's reasonable to suspect that, you know, you're starting to have some failures. It's possible that your hard drive has gone out. But
he said he did leave it on today. There was some weather that came through town, a lot of lightning and stuff. So, I mean,
so the electrical surge could do
it. I got it. Good point. I got it on one of these APC backup 600, you know.
That's good. I mean, it may or may not be electrical damage. Yeah. Electrical damage can shoot through one of those, too, but it could also come in through the phone line or through the Ethernet, if that's not predicted. But it's hard to say. It's not an easy diagnosis, but if you want, hopefully you back up all your data, right?
Yeah, I did, but I accidentally pushed my, you know, whatever, my external hard drive off my desk. It hit the floor a couple weeks ago, and all my data got lost. I bought a new one, but I haven't put it in yet. Don't be me. If I was wondering if this operating system doesn't get back on, can I buy another hard drive, put it in as a master, slave this one to it?
Yeah,
maybe,
absolutely.
And I'll still have my data?
Absolutely. You could put it in a new drive, load it up, get your operating system, get it up and running, and you could take the old hard drive and even connect it via USB with a connector cable and probably pull your data off of it.
That would be wonderful, because I got just a few things on there that I really didn't want to lose.
I understand that. Listen, we're out of time. We're going to have to let you go, but good luck with that, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, well, we got to take a short station break here and take care of some station business. Two great calls. Appreciate that. If you want to be on the air a little bit later on, 713-526-5738. When we get back from the break, you're listening to Technology Bytes. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Drew Vowles.
Is it safe?
Usted probablemente ha estado en su carro buscando por coberturas de noticias o buscando alguna música nueva. O a lo mejor usted estuvo en su casa cambiando el cuadrante buscando algo diferente. Su radio probablemente se haya quedado en KPFT y permanecido allí. Si usted es un nuevo radioescucha de esta estación, esta es la manera en que la radio de la comunidad trabaja. Nosotros dependemos de radioescuchas, no de comerciantes, para obtener dinero que usamos para la operación de nuestra estación. Nosotros tenemos campañas de donaciones pocas veces al año, donde nosotros le pedimos a usted que apoye nuestro trabajo con una donación monetaria. Usted ha venido dependiendo de nosotros, pero nosotros dependemos de usted. Vaya a la página de internet www.kpft.org para hacer su donación monetaria. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
KPFT in Houston is now home to the Scholar Circle, Tuesdays at 5 a.m. I'm Maria Armudian. The Scholar Circle brings you cutting-edge research and intelligent analysis that helps us understand the issues facing our nation and the world today. Each Tuesday, we bring together scholars from a variety of disciplines to talk about what has brought us to where we are today and where we might be headed tomorrow. From science to statesmanship, faith to philosophy, love to longevity, conflict to cooperation. We touch it all and in plain everyday language. Join us Tuesdays at 5 a.m. on the Scholar Circle right here on Houston's Community Public Radio, 90.1 FM KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
And we're back. So great to be back after that. Another hour of Technology Bites and phone calls from our listeners. All the lines are open right now if you want to call in. 713-526-5738 and be on the air. We'll be happy to talk to you about whatever you've got going on. Dental work, hard drive crashes, reconstructive surgery.
Anything cringeworthy.
TVs.
Cringeworthy. Did you find the audio for that? It's not that I heard you play it.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I shut it back down, though.
Because it creeped you
out. It's a little creepy. Yeah, that whole Is It Safe is from Marathon Man, which is a movie with a very young Dustin Hoffman. And at some point, he is abducted, and a somewhat creepy Germanish-looking guy keeps asking him, is it safe, while he unrolls this big leather roll of
I just watched
tools.
That like 6 months ago. I'd never seen it.
Yeah, a little creepy.
Oh, for the first time for you watched it?
Yeah, I'd never seen it.
It's actually, I think it won some awards. Like it's in the AFI Top 100 or something along those lines. That's why I watched it. And then I remember, I think I saw it when I was a kid. But I recently saw it maybe a few years ago.
I still need to see the movie that They Live.
You have not seen They Live? I've never seen it.
Oh, a lot of people have never even heard of that movie, and what's so weird is the line, I came
I
here
to
whatever.
I give you a kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Yep, that came from that movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they actually, at DEF CON, they had a lot of signs that had, like, most of the signs were all red, and then they had, like, some lighter blue lines, you know, hidden in the artwork and in the signs. And just like in They Live, the movie, they handed out glasses. So if you put on the glasses, you could see all the hidden movies all throughout DEF CON.
The hidden text.
The hidden text, yeah.
They had hidden movies?
No, they actually they didn't have any 3D movies, sadly. But yeah, so everything was kind of themed like that. Everything was themed about, you know, shutting down the transmissions, pulling back the curtains, seeing who really is in control and that kind of thing.
Well, that's awesome. I'm sorry I missed it.
Well, you're going to go next year, right?
I am. Hopefully they'll publish some information on which hotel is better to get. Yeah. Well, They Live, you've got to see the movie. It's got
Roddy Piper.
It's got the longest fight scene, fist fight scene of any movie I've ever seen. It's like you're watching it and you're enjoying it, but then you're just like, is this ever going to end? And it finally does, but well after you thought it should have.
It's especially now, given how many years have passed, it's probably hasn't aged well. It's going to feel very B-movie, so you just got to embrace the B-moviness of it.
But the at the time that it came out and I saw it, you know, it was very timely.
I saw it in the theater, in fact, yeah.
It was very timely, and I like the concept. This is your God, you know. Yeah, there's some great themes in it too. I think that will hold up. But yeah, you need to see it. We need to have a viewing party of that movie and finish off your beers from the wedding.
Well, see, I was going to watch it
tonight,
but it hasn't been on Netflix, so I wasn't able to watch it, and I haven't gone and looked for a physical copy.
Hmm. Well, I recommend it highly. It's a great film. It's one of the best ones, one of the really good ones.
I was going to say, on IRC, Adam's Apple said that with the last Apple TV update, that at least on some stuff, his Apple TV has started auto playing the next episode, which disappoints me greatly because I was really happy that that feature was not enabled on the Apple TV because it annoys me. I want to be able to tell it when I want to start the next episode. I don't want it to
I worry that it's going to autoplay the next episode and count that as a viewing if I don't stop it in time and then advance to the next one if I stop it.
What do you mean, count it? Do they limit you to viewing?
No. What happens is if you're watching a series, on Netflix, like a television series. Like, I've been watching Orange is the New Black, right, for example. So you play an episode, and when it's finished, it goes back to the menu, and then it advances to the next one.
Right.
And if it auto-plays, it'll start playing the next episode. So I'm worried that if I hit... No. I don't want to watch it right now. I hit stop, and then it's going to come back to that menu, and it's going to advance it to number three.
Usually when it comes back and it says resume. And allows you to play the rest of that episode before it advances to the next one.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's one of the things that I kind of fret about.
I just don't want it to start auto-playing the next episode at all for me, ever. I want there to be an option that you can turn it off. And I know that people complain about it because I looked, when it first started happening, I actually looked on Netflix's website, and there was a FAQ, and it actually was one of the things that they said, is there any way to turn this off? And they said, no, there's not, but, you know, we'll probably roll that out in a future release, which they probably won't, because I think they enjoy the fact that it's adding their numbers. And
on Roku and on Chromecast, I think I can disable autoplay, because I did so on both, So in case if I fall asleep, it just doesn't keep playing all night, and then I wake up and suddenly, like, wow, where'd that 10 gigs go?
It doesn't do that. I think after 3 episodes or something,
like, are you still here?
It'll ask if you're still there or if you're still watching. But still, I don't want it to do that at all. Like, I want to have control of whether I start another episode or not.
I will say when I watch TV.
All right.
Have you watched that clip?
No.
No, he catches on quick.
Yeah, threw it in IRC,
All right. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to start it off with Gus.
Gus, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi there. Hey, everybody. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. I took your advice and I trashed my old computer and built a new one. And then I looked into your Technology Bites thing and I saw there you can put Windows Virtual PC 2007 SP1 on my Windows 8.1 and I'm unable to download it. I don't know what's going on.
Say that again.
I have a Windows 8.1 on this new computer that I built, and I wanted to download a Windows, Virtual Windows 2007 Service Pack 1.
There is no Windows 2007.
Maybe Windows 7.
You mean Windows 7?
Oh, maybe it's Windows 7 then. Okay.
So what, you want to run Windows 7 as a virtual machine inside of Windows 8?
That's what I thought I should do because...
Why?
Your newsletter says that.
What?
Little programs that I don't think I should put in my PC.
I don't know that. I don't remember ever saying that or seeing that on my website.
There is a article in your website says uninstall all your programs and rebuild your computer again.
Mm-hmm.
And it is on the side, on the sidebar.
What?
You click it.
Are you talking about Geek Radio?
Yeah.
I have some links on there that have, links to the Apple users group, to the computer hospital, to HAL PC. I don't know that which link you're talking about.
How to rebuild your computer and install Windows without headache.
Oh, that is true. Uh-huh.
That's the one. Okay. How to rebuild your computer and reinstall Windows from scratch, fix problems reinstalling Windows.
So you don't need to. So here's the deal. So you've moved into a new operating system. It sounds like maybe you stepped up. You threw away a Windows 7 machine, or you threw away whatever the old operating system was. Now you're on Windows 8.1 probably. So what you need to be concerned with now is just getting the data over. You don't need to bring the whole old computer over.
Yeah, you're not rebuilding from scratch because, you are kind of because you – did you install Windows 8 yourself or did you buy a computer with Windows 8 on it?
No, I bought an Asus motherboard and I built my Windows 8.1. It's great. I have only the real programs in it. But your article says that if I want like other programs that I want to try out, do it on a virtual window. Don't do it on your regular window.
It's not my article. I don't think it's my article. I have some links to some advice for doing different things on computers. If you're talking about the one that links over to labnol.org that talks about how to rebuild your computer and reinstall Windows from scratch, fix problems, pre-installation, let me see. I'm trying to find
it. Yeah, so here it's at the very bottom.
Oh, yeah, don't experiment on your PC. If you're a tech enthusiast and you like to try it. This is written by a guy named Amit Agrawal. And it's, you know, I thought the information was useful to certain situations. It's a little bit dated.
It says, yeah, he wants you to create a Windows XP, Windows Vista virtual machine. Here's the thing. With if you're using Firefox or using Chrome, the add-on managers and the extension managers are really nice. You're not running these third-party software things. You're running it and you're installing it within Chrome.
I don't think that's what he's talking about.
No, that's not what he's talking about. Like, hey, don't install browser add-ons, don't do new software, and it's on your normal machine. Do it in a virtual machine, so if anything goes wrong, you can just throw away that virtual machine.
Right. So, like, say you find a program that does, I mean, this is probably way more advanced or way more, you may not need to really worry about it, but there's this idea that says if you're going to experiment, say, with beta software, or are you going to try using a program that has the potential to cause your system to crash, you can run it in a virtual machine.
Oh, okay.
So you would get a program like Virtual PC, which he talks about here, is a free program, but you still have to have the operating system to load on that machine. So it's kind of like building a computer, but you're building a virtual computer that runs on your main computer.
Now, if you want to mess around with that, if you Google VirtualBox, that's a free software. And if you still have your Windows 7 install disk from your last PC, you could use that
to get that going. Virtual PC 2007 is a free download from...
Isn't that dated, though? Would that still run? I mean, that's 7 years old.
It might very well be. But if you're interested in virtualization, VirtualBox is a free one. Parallels is one that you can use, and VMware is another popular one. VirtualBox is free. VMware and Parallels cost money. But even then, once you have that program, all that really does is it creates a virtual computer on your computer. You still have to have the Windows 7 install disk or the Windows XP install disk or whatever operating system you want to load into that virtual machine. And then you treat it like a whole other computer. You can install programs on it. But unless you have a specific thing that you're trying to do, I don't know that you need to go down that path.
I've got a question, not to be too... Well, Windows with a single copy and a single license of, say, Windows 8.1, you can't install it in a virtual... Okay.
No, you look at your license agreement. It's one operating system per one computer. So if you want to run a guest operating system, you have to have a licensed copy of that operating system, and you have to install it.
So it's not everything is not free. It's just that
nothing is free.
No. Yeah, the platform
Linux
without the program is free. Okay.
Well, some of them are, some of them aren't. As I said, VirtualBox, which is a virtualization software, is free.
Last thing is I listened to your XBMC. Program last time, and it was fantastic. I like that.
My what program?
XBMC?
Yeah, Xbox Media Center.
Oh, were we talking about Xbox Media Center?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think we were talking about the different ways to stream.
I tried to do all this research for fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there. At this point, it's if you're willing to do the research and go read up, you can do a lot of really neat things for not very much money these days. It's getting fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for your call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
713-526-5738. You know, I guess you have to be careful. And I haven't reviewed the links that we have on the computer, but there was a time when rebuilding your computer from scratch was a constant question that came up, and this guy published a list of how to do it. It's dated 2010, so I probably need to go and update those links. But be aware that when you visit a website and it offers links, those links are not necessarily to links to content that were created by the website owner. On geekradio.com, I link to other people's web pages that have good information, but that's someone else's work. So you need to be, you know, read up and see who wrote the actual.
Hold on. I thought you did everything on the entire internet, all the pictures, all the content.
I wrote the entire internet up to and not including Tub Girls and
but you were Goatsy. I knew you were Goatsy.
I am Goatsy.
Oh.
Shake my hand.
No,
shake my other hand. All right, 713.
Fist bump.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Groovehouse, what are you doing?
Photosphere.
Photosphere?
Yeah.
Is that a thing where it lets you take a bunch of pictures and do a fully circular panorama of some kind?
Yeah. I'm going to make a tiny planet.
Oh, look at you.
The internet is hungry.
Well, can we get a call on the air, or do we have to wait till you're finished doing your photography?
He's halfway done. Just give him, give him a minute.
I want to see how it turns out.
Stitching. It's going to be cool, yeah.
What's the program called?
It came with my Nexus 5.
That didn't tell me what it's called.
It's the built-in camera, yeah.
Really? Oh, yeah. How interesting.
We can take a call if you want.
Well.
Well, finish your photo, man.
Okay, Barrett, who's up next?
I can do. I was going to show you the photo stuff. I was going to have my camera ready.
I thought we were. I thought that's what we were talking about.
All right, next up is Victor.
Is it safe, Victor?
How's it going, you guys?
Good. What can we do for you?
I got a question. I kind of messed myself over. I did a backup to iTunes, you know, to restore my phone and stuff like that. And for some reason, I just hit the, you know, encrypt password and all that. I never do. But I went ahead and did it, and this was last month. I backed up my phone again because it was kind of acting up on me, so I wanted to restore it and all that and hit the backup and all that. But I can't remember the password now. Is there any way on a MacBook Pro for it to be because I know it doesn't give you an option, you know, like if you forgot password or anything like that. But is there any way of trying to bypass it or doing anything? Because I've been, like, looking, trying to search, you know, online and stuff, and I see like a program that just keeps on popping up that supposedly will kind of, I guess, like hack your password for you.
On an encrypted iPhone backup or iTunes backup, does it say it'll do that?
Yeah, but it, what I've been seeing is, you know, for like Windows computers and stuff. And so.
No, see, I mean, okay, first of all, that's exactly what I asked you, and you need to answer that question correctly. Are you seeing advertisements for anything that specifically says it will decrypt or hack a password for an iTunes backup? I mean, I know that there are programs out there that will, for example, they will crack a password on a password protected Word or Excel document. There are programs out there that will, you know, break a password for a Windows login. But I've never seen anything that advertises like breaking encryption software where you've encrypted data.
Yeah, well, the one that I keep running into is for, it says it's for backups for, you know, like iTunes, basically, for the, you know, when you do restore and stuff.
Really? What's it called?
What is it called? I think it's just Restore Backup. It's kind of real basic. Man, I wish I had my computer with me now.
I would say that it's probably not going to break the encryption on an encrypted backup. If you encrypted your iTunes backup or your iPhone backup, if you don't have that password, then you don't have that back. You don't have access to that backup.
That's it, basically.
But you can go to the Apple Store and talk to them and see if they have any suggestions.
I would go there. I'm seeing like some ads for like iPhone encrypted backup on Locker and stuff, but a lot of these look really like it's money at this point.
One that supposedly is like a trial, I guess, and it's free. But I haven't won because like going through where you can get that file, that backup file, mm-hmm. and then pass it like to a Windows computer and then run it through, and it's supposed to, you know, basically trying, I guess, hack that password for you. And so, but like I said, I wasn't sure if that was just kind of, you know.
Without actually seeing the actual software, I couldn't speak to its legitimacy. But I'm sure that if you're not the only person who's done this, and the most reasonable option would be to talk to someone at the Apple Store to see if they have a tool that they can recommend for getting access to that.
Now, you're not locked out of the phone, right?
No, I'm not locked out. It's just I don't really back up my phone too much. The last last backup I had was like from a year ago. And since then, you know, I've saved different things on my phone and stuff like that that, you know, I was trying to get access to again. Mm-hmm. I can still use my phone and everything. It's just a lot of the stuff that I have saved on here.
Yeah, that a year ago is what you want to get all that year-old data. Gotcha.
Yeah, basically everything that I've done, you know, saved on my phone from the year up until now.
Hey, I would schedule time. You can go online at apple.com and you can schedule an appointment at the Genius Bar to talk to one of the Apple guys and see if there is an option, if they know of any way to get it. But the idea of that encryption is designed to keep people out of your software and not allow access to it without the password. It's not really designed. I mean, in an ideal world, it's not designed to be cracked. There is some very low-grade encryption out there that can be cracked pretty easily, but I don't know if you can crack the Apple stuff or not.
Do this. Yeah. So there's a company I trust. They're called Elcom Soft, like E-L-C-O-M Soft. Go. Okay. They've got a phone password breaker frequently asked questions, and I would go read that, and that'll give you a little bit of information on it.
Okay,
Elcom Soft, and then Google for phone password recovery, and they do a little bit of demystifying.
Okay,
and they can kind of give you what the real deal is. But that's the whole thing. It's like by virtue of encrypting the backup, something's either got to be broken. If you can get into that encryption that easily, then why even bother encrypting it? You know,
yeah.
So it's made to keep you out.
Yeah, the crappy thing about it is I saved the password on one of the apps I had in my phone.
Oh, yeah, that's all now. Yeah.
Since I can't update it, it had been saved, you know, so I got the app back, but the password's not in
it. It's a hard lesson to learn, but, you know, just like write down the password, put it in your sock drawer, you know, just put it somewhere, you know, but I've learned that, and it's tough, but, you know, either that or hang on to it in, you know, a handful of years when all that encryption's kind of trivial and it can be broken really quickly, you can get that back. You know, it's not gone forever, it just might be gone for now.
Right. Okay, well, I appreciate
you guys.
Good luck, man.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Bye, Victor.
Bye-bye.
Now I've got the app. I'm trying to...
Now Jay's...
Trying to do it on my phone.
You can take...
It doesn't make tiny planets, but it...
Do you want
to... It allows you to take a full, you know, 360 view.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it doesn't match up. Like, my photo didn't match up with the ceiling tiles, so it's kind of weird looking.
Barrett's tracking me with his phone. This is a mess.
Right. We do have another call on the line.
I'm making pictures.
Okay, we'll wait.
All right, Groovehouse, who do we have?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Tony.
Tony, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Okay, great. I got a Mac that a friend of mine loaned to me, and I think it's got OS 10.8.6. And she doesn't have the restore disks, and it'll only boot up halfway.
So you have a Mac, you got a version of the Apple operating system on it, and it only boots up halfway. How do you determine halfway on a boot up? What is it? Where does it get?
You'll see, hopefully the half that boots up is the second half.
I think the Apple came up, and then it hung up, and it didn't go anywhere after that.
So you get the little Apple splash.
You
and
get
then,
to like the gray Apple screen with the darker gray Apple.
Well, there's a... What's the method for... Well...
Booting from a CD?
I guess
it
he doesn't have the CD. He doesn't have the disk, though.
Yeah, but if I have an older...
Sounds like an older,
system,
right? 10.8.6.
System up and look at it?
What's that?
If I have an older operating system disk, can I boot the Macintosh and still see some stuff?
You might be able to. You could. There's an option to put the CD in.
Yeah.
Depends on the format of your hard drive. Too, and how old the OS is, but I would give it a shot. You should definitely be able to boot into it.
Because if you boot into the CD, there's the disk utility on the CDs.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also boot off USB. So, like, the newer OSs don't come with a install CD, and they don't even make them. But there's ways you can make a bootable USB thumb drive, and you could boot off that. But you would need to have access to
It's an older computer, so he's not going to be booting up any of the newer operating systems.
It's 10.8.6.
Is that what you said, 10.8?
10.8.5 is what I've got, and 10.8.6, I think, is what she's got.
But 10.8 is
Yeah, 10.8 is 10.8. Well, you can boot. Okay. Yeah, if you have that disk, you can boot from it to see if you can...
Yeah,
but
I don't have that one, the one that she has on her hard drive. I've got... one from my transition Mac that does OS 9 and OS 10, and I don't remember what version number that is, but it's 10.4 at least.
But that
might be too old.
Yeah.
But there's ways you can make a bootable USB thumb drive with the operating system since 10.7, I think. you really don't want to use a CD to do much with it because it's really slow. At least on install, a USB thumb drive installs in like 10 minutes or something. CD takes.
But if he doesn't have any of those operating systems to do it on,
Right.
Now you can if you
well, you just said that your system is 10.8.5. If your system's 10.8.5, then
it was not CD to start with.
Then it was 10.4, and then you upgraded, and at some point you had to flip to doing the App Store upgrade. And in the App
Store, so you could re-download the operating system from the App Store.
You could re-download it from the App Store and then use the stuff online on Lifehacker and some other stuff to go in and get the disk image and create a bootable USB and then boot off
that
on her machine.
Okay, so what Flicked said makes sense and is true.
Have you tried starting in safe
mode? Hold on, one at a time. Pete, go ahead.
Have you tried starting it up in safe mode?
Not yet.
That might be, you know, since you are getting the startup tone and, you know, getting it seems to be starting, then that may get you farther and may get you something that you can get.
Now, is there any concern about the data that's on the drive right now, or would you be satisfied with the reinstall?
At least the software, yeah, there's a concern.
Okay. Well, you can get on a computer that has internet access, log into the App Store with the ID that had bought the upgrade for that operating system that's running on the broken PC, and re-download. If you Google how to install OS X 10.8. Whatever from a USB, there are websites that talk about how to download that file and take it apart and make a bootable USB drive and throw it on there, and that you could plug that into the broken Mac and see if you can boot from it and see what options you get in terms of either repairing it or reinstalling it.
Because you can run Disk Utility at that point
yeah.
and see if you can repair if the drive has problems and try to repair it. The other thing, if you're scared about that you might destroy the data on the drive or something like that, the other thing you can do is when you boot up the Mac, I think it's if you hold down T, it puts it in target mode, which basically makes the whole Mac into a big external USB enclosure or disk enclosure, and then you can connect it to another Mac, and it'll show up as a hard drive. Like, it'll basically just present the internal hard drive on that Mac to the other Mac as a external hard drive, and then you could actually make a backup of it to that other Mac. Either to another attached external drive or whatever, so you have a copy of the data.
Okay, so that's target mode. What was the other one you said, safe mode?
I don't remember how you start safe mode. How do you do that?
Basically, you shut the Mac down, wait for 10 seconds, hit the power button, and right after you hear the startup tone, hold down the shift key, and then once you see the progress indicator, you know, spinning gear kind of thing, you can let go of the shift key.
Okay, and what happens in safe mode?
Basically, it'll boot up with only essential operating system stuff started. So if it's some corrupt, you know, if there's some corrupt item that's stopping it from being able to get booted up, then that might get you around it. And then you could run Disk Utility from the actual disk or you have some options.
Run utility disk from the hard drive itself. Or
if it boots up in safe mode, you may be able to do that.
So basically, what's happening is you got a computer that will not boot,
right?
It does not boot to completion. So there's a possibility that it would boot to completion in what's called safe mode.
Right.
Once you can get it to boot to completion in safe mode, then you at least have access to the operating system and to the system. All the applications that are on there, and then you could run some utilities to see if you could fix the problem that's causing it not to boot into normal mode.
Okay.
There may be something that, at least in the Windows environment, which I'm more familiar with, there may be something that's trying to load when you load the computer normally that is causing it not to boot up. So if you can get it booted into safe mode, you might be able to find out what that is and turn it off or uninstall it or repair it.
And that's what utility will find it, because I don't know.
Maybe we don't know.
Oh yeah,
this is the process. This is
I'm not going to try to find it, right?
Well, what you're going to do is you're going to see if you can even boot the computer into safe mode, because that costs you nothing. It takes very little effort. And it's worth a shot. So you're going to see if you can boot it into safe mode. If you can boot it into safe mode, that might at least tell you that the computer, it's a software issue and not a hardware issue. If you can't boot it into safe mode, this whole conversation is meaningless.
Okay. Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
So see if you can boot it into safe mode. That'll get you one step further down the road. If you can boot it into safe mode, then go find the disk utility and run it and have it check the integrity of the disk and see if it can see any problems, like fixing, you know, file permissions or something like that. It's kind of an automated thing. You can also research disk utility online and see what your different options are, but it might help you recover the system.
Okay.
And if nothing else, if you can get it booted into safe mode, you might be able to copy files that you care about off to an external hard drive, maybe. I don't know if it'll let you get an external hard drive in safe mode or not, but it might give you more options for recovering the data. At which point, once you recover the data, then you could conceivably then get the operating system disk and reinstall everything from scratch to get the system working again, then move the files back. If all of this is too overwhelming or it's not something you feel like you can tackle, I'll give you the same advice I gave the other guy, which is, you know, make an appointment with the Apple store and take it in there and let them do it. But yeah, safe mode might be a worthwhile option for you.
And target mode was like turning it into an external hard drive?
Target mode is where you boot from from a CD or from a USB. No?
No.
Tell me again.
No, target mode is, I'm pretty sure it's the T key. If you boot it up and hold down the T key, what it'll do is it'll basically boot up not the regular OS. It'll boot up. It's probably on the I forgot what Apple calls it, but the like EEPROM basically.
Oh, right. Like okay.
It boots it up enough so that the hard drive is up and powered on, and it basically presents the hard drive over the external connections as a hard drive. Like it looks like a USB drive.
In other words, it doesn't load the operating system. It doesn't load the software that's on the disk.
It just turns it into a really expensive USB enclosure for a hard drive.
With a very limited interface to look at the system.
It just gives you basic, it's like a USB enclosure for.
Right, but what can you do from there?
You hook that computer up to another Mac or whatever, and it appears as an external hard drive.
Okay, that's interesting to know.
Yeah.
So if you boot it up in the target mode, then you can do you connect it to the other computer first?
I don't remember if you have to hook it up first or not.
But so you understand what he's saying there. If you boot it into target mode, it basically turns your computer into an external hard drive. You should be able to connect to another computer and see
that hard drive.
If that hard drive is if it's intact, if you can then pull your files off of it.
Right. I'm familiar enough to understand all that. I've done it about three times for the safe mode, I believe.
Right.
Or whatever instead of reinstalling the entire operating system, there's a partial recovery operating system thing.
Yeah, I think the newer versions of Apple.
Yeah. Well,
I've never booted into that safe mode, but I think there's, when you're in safe mode, I think you can do like a recovery option to try to repair or something.
Yeah.
I've never done it though.
Well, I did it once and I forgot I had done it. I took it to Apple and they charged me about $85. And then the next time I needed to do it, I called Apple and they said they do that for free now. It was several years ago.
They can be very helpful when they want to be at the Apple store. So sometimes you take a computer in, it's acting wonky, and they'll just kind of do their mumbo jumbo and it'll be back up and running before you know it.
Yeah, right. That's okay. Well, I appreciate it. One other thing is I have a smartphone or whatever. And it keeps trying to update the system, and one of the things that it was going to put on there is this new terrorist group over in Syria called ISIS. There's a thing called ISIS Wallet, and it allows ISIS to take money out of your account. Have you heard about that?
No.
Verizon?
I hadn't heard of that yet.
Yeah, well, it was a requirement that you couldn't update your system unless this was part of the deal.
That actually looks legit. I hadn't heard of that, but
yeah, well, it probably AT&T, is. Just unfortunately, Sony, picked the same as these other guys, and so I didn't really want to do it. But one day I was kind of in a hurry, and I accidentally hit the wrong dead gum button, and it updated.
Okay, but it doesn't.
I don't think it's. Don't
it's not
it's related.
Related
though,
it's not related to the ISIS terrorist group.
It's just got the same name.
Nor is it related to the Greek god. Way back, the Dare Goddess.
Or the TV show.
It's simply an app that lets you put your credit card information in so you can make credit card purchases with your phone.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't even consider doing that.
Well, but it's not, I mean, just let's be clear, it's not terrorist related.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
All right, so it's not like it's going to give money to the terrorists, unless you like shoppingterrorists.com.
No, you need
something.
To go to givemoneytotheterroristwallet.com.
And I'd be guilty of aiding and abetting, and they'd come in and compensate my...
No, this actually, it's kind of like there's a... The iOS has a built-in kind of...
So it's kind of like Google Wallet or Passport or something like
a
that.
Lot of, yeah, a lot of people are shooting it out right now. So there are a number of, like, it's near-field communication, or it's like pay with your phone is kind of what they're all aiming for. Google and a number of other companies came out and they said, hey, here's our standard. Apple and other companies, you know, had their own consortium and said, hey, here's our standard. And because of that, it's going to be kind of a, you know, like a VHS Betamax shootout. Where
they're
it's
actually rebranding.
Right.
The ISIS wallet is actually rebranding according to a...
I was about to say, that's, I bet they're hating
a
their name
CNN
right
report. They're rebranding.
They're on to us. Abort.
I use the Starbucks app, you know, to pay for my coffee.
I love that, yeah.
And it'll actually pop up when I go to Starbucks now.
No, it pops up on your phone. It knows you're geo-aware and says, hey, Jay's about to drink some coffee.
Yeah,
I'm gonna...
Hey, I see you're back at Starbucks.
Does it ask you if you want your regular and then name the kind of latte?
It doesn't order for me yet. That's unfortunate.
Give it 2 years, it'll be like, hey, you look tired. You should go to Starbucks.
And do you want to give a buck to ISIS?
It turns on your FaceTime camera, judges your...
The CEO
Would you like AK-47s for that?
What'd you find, Groovehouse?
It says the CEO of ISIS, of the wallet company, has said that... we're actively working on a new brand. He says, changing a brand is never easy, but we know this is the right decision.
Yeah, I've heard they're choosing between death to infidels and atheist as possible.
And the little inside kind of jokes they had about terminating employees, where they called it, we had another beheading today. So they've had to knock that off.
Not too soon.
All right. Too soon.
I gotta go to the printer.
All right. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.
They also stopped their plan to launch a new beverage called Jihad, and the slogan was going to be "Taste the Jihad."
ISIS is tough. From you know, that's one of those words that you know it really was pretty innocent even 6 months ago, even 6 days ago, as far as my information awareness goes.
I want to say it hit my radar like in the last few weeks. I've heard people mentioning it, but yeah, it's definitely blown up a lot more recently.
Well, the funny part is,
I see what you did there.
A lot of places aren't referring to them as ISIS anymore because they changed their name to the Islamic State, and then the U.S. government refers to them as ISIL.
Oh, so now it's the ISS, which is the International Space Station.
I said, no, really? Why have the astronauts been invading Iraq? I don't get it. All right, we're going to offend somebody here if we don't shut up. So 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We have all of our lines are open. If you want to be on the air, we are taking your calls at 713-526-5738. So I didn't even think about, I mean, you know, after the phone call about the guy who was, you know, kind of blurring the lines between our website and another website, what he's trying to do, and I forget that. That people really do, like, you know...
Click on things.
Well, no, like, they see something that says, you know... I mean, the word ISIS has been around a lot longer than the terrorist group, you know, has been around.
Right.
But now, I mean, I guess people see it, and they don't stop to think, like, there's multiple...
There's something else. Yeah.
There might be something else. It's automatically, it must be a virus and spyware, and they're changing their name, as Greenhouse found out. They're having to rebrand.
Rebrand, yeah.
Okay, this is completely unrelated.
Okay.
Maybe it'll get out of controversial territory. Maybe. But in a different way. All right? So we've all discussed the Oxford comma and whether we like it or don't like it or whatever. But what about one space after a period or two?
Two.
One.
If you're typing on two. A typewriter.
One.
Two.
Two.
And
one.
In the computer,
yeah, one
world,
on a word
one
processor.
Is fine.
No, there's an article. Two no matter what.
But so two, see, no matter what. This is the awesome thing because – I was taught on a typewriter. I was taught two. I still use two. I don't care what I'm using. I use two. Two spaces makes it the sentences separate more easily. Mm-hmm. And so there's this big argument right now on the internet for a couple of years now.
Slate just had an article
where they're like, No, it should be one because the typesetters always wanted it to be one, and it's all the stupid typewriter people that made it two. But I read an article yesterday, the day before, this guy actually went back and said, this isn't true. Like, if you actually go back and look at typesetting rules all the way back into the 1700s and stuff,
it was two.
It wasn't two, but it wasn't one either. It was
1.5?
Because it was typesetters. It was actually, yeah, it was somewhere between 1.5 and 1.8 or something, because they would use letters. So,
like, the
it was, yeah, it was actually M space, yeah, was what, yeah, you used, which, wow, is a full M. It's a square shape. It's bigger than one space that they would use between words.
Which is an N space for,
right,
non-typesetters.
Right. So it was actually bigger than one space, but then there were all these sub-rules about, well, because it's typesetting, which is kind of an art, and it's like, once you lay this stuff out, then you have to go in and you have to start, like, kerning and changing some spaces to get everything to look beautiful on the page. And so over time, everybody kind of forgot about those rules, and they created the typewriter rules, which didn't really actually... So it's not actually because of typewriters that this two-space versus one-space thing, and it's not that typesetters actually ever wanted one space. It's just that... And so what this guy is saying, which is funny, is that the one-space rule actually came out as a result of automated typesetting on computers, because two spaces was too much, and if it wrapped after one space, you'd start a line with a space. And so in order to get around that, they made it one space. And so it's actually
huge for bad programming,
so,
is what that
so
is.
So the one space is actually a product of automated typesetting. It actually does not go back historically. Here, he said that the few things he found where they actually used one space, there was like a subset of like certain French book printers that used one space, the equivalent of one space. But other than that, the standard for a long time was to use an M space, which is actually bigger than a word space.
So on my phone in certain apps, if I type two spaces, it automatically puts a period. If I type one space, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I like delineation between sentences. And if you don't like white space or appreciate white space, go read a whole bunch of minified Java and then come back and we'll talk. Spacing's
well,
good.
The
braces are good. Indentation's
is,
good.
The other thing with the two spaces is, from a typesetter's point of view, on obviously this is on the computer, is you get these rivers of white where it's sort of too much space. And so you get where your eye, when you look at the page, can see the gap after every piece of punctuation, and it looks wrong.
They need to write longer sentences.
No, well, or have no punctuation, yeah.
It's just how they
align.
Why,
I think that's the other piece of why it got into, you know, as computers came in, they could have adjusted, the space could be automatically, you know, adjusted to be whatever, and the whole two-space thing wouldn't be that big an issue. But the kind of aesthetic, if you ran a column of type in a newspaper, for example, and you had two spaces after it, you would get where your eye would see all these gaps.
But that again is automated typesetting, where the person isn't going in and beautifying the page. They're just spitting it up there on a computer, and it's got two spaces. And if those spaces end up close enough together in descending rows, they call them rivers, because it looks like there's this gap that's kind of meandering down the page. And
it's fun to watch if you do the TLD, you know, too long didn't read, and you actually scroll through the whole thing really fast. It's little mazes, you know. I like it. I like a lot of stuff
so,
like that.
I don't know. I personally prefer two spaces because I think it separates it. And the other thing people were talking about is like when you use punctuation, like for when you use punctuation for acronyms, like if instead of typing, you know, FCC, you're using something, you type F period C period. C period.
Period.
Space, because you're going to the next word. Now, is that the end of a sentence? Or is that a word space? Well, you don't know until you look at the next word. If the next word is a proper word, it starts with a capital. And so now there's no way to know except by reading the whether the sentence ended or if it is continuing.
Drop the periods in the acronym.
But if you put two spaces, then you know it's the end of a sentence.
What if you have a lot of acronyms? Do you do the comma and the Oxford comma? Okay.
I'm a fan of the Oxford comma.
When I'm writing my column for the Houston Chronicle, sometimes I suggest a web link to go read more information. And if that web link, some web links have hyphens in them. Some web links are so long that when they get put into the paper, because you go down to the next line,
they add a hyphen.
So I get readers write me and they say, well, I was reading your column and I typed in this address and it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't work. And I said, well, you have to realize that in English and when you're writing on the page, if a word is broken at a line break, then it gets a hyphen put in there.
My URL bar only has one line. I can't get the two lines on there. That's my issue.
You haven't gotten a lot.
I'd do that second line.
So I struggle with that. And the other thing that always bothers me is if I end a sentence with quoted text, the period goes on the outside of the quotes.
Yeah. You know what? That's another one. I blatantly disobey that rule. And I've done that for years. And I felt like I was, you know, like really blazing a trail doing this. But it turns out that there actually are certain document standards where they say, you know, you actually do put you put inside the quotes.
Depends on if it's dialogue, and it depends on what, if it's like, for if there's like a locative and evocative, and depending on how you do it, they can go inside or it can go outside, depending on how it's set up. Like before you start a quote, you're supposed to start with a comma, space, and then quote, and then if they're starting something, you start with an uppercase thing, and if that's the case, then you can put a period inside the quote.
Part of mine is always because a lot of times I'm referring to computer stuff, and so I'm never going to put the period inside if it, like, is going to conflict with what the command is.
Yeah, it looks
is.
Funky at that point, yeah.
Yeah. So,
right.
But, if I'm quoting someone, then I will put the punctuation inside. So I'll actually, like, say, you know, he said, whatever, period, double quote, period. Because the first period's his and the second period's mine.
You should just make everyone shout. Do an exclamation point in the first one and then a period outside, and it's fine.
And the other thing was that the way that Word handled quotes as opposed to like using just a straight text editor and put in a quote, there was a different kind of
character. Because it would flip the forward and
which blows up quote. When you bring it out to other ANSI, like Unix editors.
Right, which newspapers like to use or did like to use, so I would have to change the quotes in Word when I was composing an article to use these this other kind of quotes that wouldn't blow up.
Microsoft does that. The same thing if you do two hyphens together, Microsoft replaces it with something funky that doesn't exist in a lot of Unix
it's
character sets.
It's the long dash.
The long dash, yeah. We may have been, I don't know if we've been insensitive or not, but in case we were insensitive earlier, we apologize? Should probably apologize. Just in case. Given world events.
I wasn't even thinking of that. I was just thinking of the general type of behavior that punctuates the news. And I'd forgotten about that most recent incident. So
punctuates.
So I do apologize for that. So it was not my intention to be insensitive to that recent incident. I haven't been watching the news enough.
I didn't know until any of this stuff was going on until today. I'm much more concerned about comma placement than anything else.
Right.
We've got to drive. We've got a call.
Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Nadil.
Nadil, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I do have an external drive as a Toshiba one. I used it as a backup external drive for a while. And I decided to upgrade my Windows 7 from Windows Home Premium to Professional. Well, I made sure that everything was on that external drive, and I unplugged it, of course, and I did the upgrade. Actually, I did format the hard drive and reinstalled, especially the Windows 7 Professional. When I plugged again the external drive, I couldn't even see it. So when I go to computer window, I open it, nothing. I can see my C drive, the DVD drive, the other USB ports, but not the external drive. I went to the start button, left click there, go to computer, right click on computer, go to manage, click on to manage, then go to disk management. I can see the disk, and it is called disk one, but the problem is it is stated in a located partition.
Okay.
Or disk.
If I'm assuming Windows, you say the new computer's running Windows 8, right?
No, Windows 7 Professional.
Windows 7 Professional. Okay, Windows 7 tends to default to, I mean, I don't know if you can do FAT32, so it should be an NTFS drive, so it should be able to read NTFS. I'm sure that the external hard drive is probably formatted NTFS. Have you tried plugging that drive into another computer?
Actually, two other computers, and I'm having the same problem.
I don't know what caused that. I mean, did you ever have an opportunity before you formatted the old hard drive to review the contents of that external hard drive to make sure that it was being written out correctly?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I checked it right before I unplugged it. I had a very important folders, and I made sure that they were in there before I unplugged it.
Well, obviously, you don't want to allocate the drive or do too much with that. I would say the first thing I would try to do is since it's on an external hard drive and you're not writing new data to it, if there's data on there, it's probably okay. I mean, it's not getting changed. You could try using a data recovery utility just to check the integrity of the drive that you can install on your computer and then scan the external hard drive with it.
You mean a software that they can grab from internet?
Yeah, something like there's EASUS, EASUS.
Let me know on that, please. Say again, please.
It's called EASUS, EASUS.
EASUS.
I'm trying to find, let me find out there. I don't want to go to EASUS.com. Hold on. And EASUS.
EASUS.
Yes, EASUS. And they make a recovery program that I've used in the past. It's very good. You could download it and use it for free to see if it can recover the data. But if you actually do the data recovery, it charges you to use the software.
Well, I think it's fair to pay the price if I can.
If it'll work. So you can download it for free from EASUS.com. And they have a data recovery wizard. It basically, when you load the software on your computer, it'll look at all the hard drives. You can choose the drive that you want to scan, and it will check the drive and see if it can repair that.
Well, thanks a lot for your help. I appreciate your help, guys. Thank you for being here for us.
All right. Thanks for your call. Good luck.
Bye. Thank you.
All right, 713-526-5738. We've got a little bit of time left. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, you're welcome to call in. We are got about 8 minutes left in the show, so maybe another quick call. But
we're having grammar conversations on IRC now.
Are you now?
The show within the show.
you need to join the IRC to get that fun going. grammar. Have you seen Kelsey Grammer has a Twitter account where he complains about grammar issues?
Is it a real account or is it?
This sounds made up.
No, it's really. It's really
verified.
It's Frazier. And let's see. And one of the things that he, one of his early on tweets that he took issue with, was the Doge dog.
Mm.
Such wow.
Wow. Much awesome.
Let me see if it's.
He was trying to correct a meme.
He critiques and corrects grammar in 144 or less or 140 or less.
Nice.
He's and it is verified. It's the Kelsey Grammer account. He's got 37,000 followers. He says, actor, comedian, director, and more, solving Twitter's grammar problem one helpful tweet at a time.
Oh, man.
So he's a grammar Nazi. So
it's
he's,
grammar on grammar.
It's grammar on grammar.
No, that's a different Twitter account. I'm sorry.
He's kind of moved away from the grammar on grammar, grammar correction stuff, but it's in there. Anyway. Hilarious.
That's good.
Hilarious if you want to be corrected. But when he kind of took on the Doge meme, I was like, apparently
leave
you don't understand internet grammar.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've I don't understand some of the people that are like really like. I understand the idea that like, you know, the written word is to communicate, and so if there's not some kind of standards, then you can't communicate effectively, right? So that right. that's the entire point. But some of the like nuanced rules that people get into and like just attack on, and like really stick to. It's not necessarily about effective communication anymore. It's just about this is a rule. Like you should obey this rule because it's a rule, and it doesn't. To me, that doesn't really make much sense, especially when you start to look at like languages in general, right? I mean, any living language evolves, you know. So to say, well, when I learned this, these are the rules, and this is how the language is, and this is the right way to do it. That's not the case, because 50 years before that, 100 years before that, 200 years before that, it was still that language, but the rules have changed.
Language evolves. We just want to make sure we don't dumb things down or lose information. My big thing with the commas is because it starts to get ambiguous as to how many items you have, and it's list management. I know that's because I like language, because I like computer programs that are very, you know, they're very explicit. Like when you say this thing, it means exactly this thing. And right. If you mean something else, you say it differently. So well, like for me, language is kind of like that. You
it's
know?
All the jokes with the Oxford comma, like where they don't use the Oxford comma, like the whole one where
each
it's like,
shoots and leaves.
Well, the one with like the hookers one. Have you seen
no,
that one?
No, no.
With Stalin and Lenin. It was like they partied and hung out with the hookers. I mean, you can't do it because it's on the air, but... Hooker's Stalin and Lenin.
Great example.
Right?
I think the Russians know how
and
to
so,
do it.
And so the difference is with the Oxford comma, it says they hung out with the hookers, comma, Stalin, comma, and Lenin. Without the Oxford comma, it says they hung out with the hookers, comma, Stalin and Lenin.
The hookers.
So it sounds like that's their name.
Right.
To write the name.
Sorry. Or it sounds like Stalin and Lenin actually had a side profession, possibly.
Exactly. So that's the difference. Without the Oxford comma, it looks like that's the names of them. Like, whereas with it, it looks like it says three separate items.
I don't have a problem with like trying to maintain our language or maintain the language that we use and have rules that are common across that to make it.
Effective communication.
Right. I mean,
LOL.
Like when I was in Iceland, for example, they speak the same language they've spoke for, you know, thousands of years. They
OMG.
They can actually read their original texts, you know, and stories and their history in the original language. They can read that.
We can't do that in English.
No. But what I don't like, is like you're having a great conversation and you're engaged in a topic and you misuse a your or a their or something. And somebody says, well, this is a great conversation. I'd like to join in. You misused your.
That's a distraction.
That's not
technique.
The point of the story. Let it go.
It's not. It doesn't contribute to the discussion to show that you've managed to correct my grammar. Thank you for correcting my grammar. You could have sent me an email and said, hey, maybe you might want to know you made a typo in that or you But,
yeah.
But instead, you got to call me out in public.
Well, it's just a distraction.
It's pettiness. I think it's people being petty.
Oh, especially when people like use it to like as the argument. Like, you know, somebody will say, I think you're crazy, and they're using Y-O-U-R.
Because you can't even type correctly.
And then somebody will come in there and say star and then give the correct usage of the your word. And
I think your crazy pants are awesome. That's how you do without an apostrophe. We're almost out of time.
Yeah, we're going to have to get going. So we appreciate you tuning in to Technology Bites. Tonight. We'll be back next Wednesday for more Technology Bites. And that's all I got. So we're going to get out of here. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Many American young people enlist in the military without knowing really what it's going to be like because they're looking for opportunities to forward their education and their career. Here in Houston, we have a special organization that works to inform young people about the realities of military enlistment and also about alternatives to the military for education, careers, and service. You can support this organization, the Houston Committee for Youth and Non-Military Opportunities, and enjoy a wonderful jazz concert at the same time on Sunday, August 31st at 7 p.m., Houston Mennonite Church at 1231 Wirt Road. And hear the Bob Henschen Trio and the Free Radicals. Donation of $10 if you can, and hope to see you there.
This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
First you listen, then you fall in love. You have your favorite programs that you listen to each and every week. And finally, you do the right thing by calling in that pledge of support to KPFT. You feel great, but guess what? Your job, it's not done just yet. You still need to fulfill your promise to KPFT by sending that pledge payment today. And when you do, you take that often forgotten last step. Don't wait any longer. KPFT depends on you.